It must be football season in Texas. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Every Friday night, get an insider's look at college football with a Texas twist. From big matchups and exclusive interviews to expert analysis and accurate odds. Everything a Texas football fan needs. Game Day with Jeff Ward right now on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Powered by Uber Eats.
Hey, this is Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward. Wherever you are in Texas, thanks for listening. The show is about the storylines of the games, the players, the coaches, and the programs you care about most and the best day for football. All right, so here's what's ahead. I'll give you my Game Day ranking 1 through 5. That's the power index of 1 through 5. There are changes again, thanks to a game in Dallas. We'll talk about something called the talent fee. Yes, it's a new term. If you're a college football fan, you have to get ready for it. It's going to change things dramatically. I'll break down the teams, the coaches, and the players most under pressure. We'll talk about the Aggie situation at quarterback going forward. So first, let's break down the top five.
Now, the Game Day Power Index, powered by Kia of Fresco.
The battle for the skillet in Dallas has changed things a lot. It means goodbye, TCU. Welcome back, SMU. And oddly enough, a team from Lubbock is making their way back in. So let's start at five. And five is Texas State. They're 3-1, and they're going to be haunted probably the entire season by a three-point loss at home to Arizona State, a good Arizona State team. And that's going to frustrate them, but they're good. They're going to chase a nine-win season again. They've got Sam Houston State this weekend. Texas State is at five. And number four is SMU again. They started the year at two. There's a lot to like there. They had 11 wins a year ago. Then they lost to BYU in an ugly game in Dallas. Here's the thing. That loss doesn't look quite so bad at this point because BYU is undefeated at 4-0. SMU wins the Iron Skillet against TCU. They score 66 points in the process. They go into Fort Worth and score 66. They get Florida State in Dallas this weekend. That is a Florida State team that is beyond desperate. They may have just given up. It's a huge game for SMU and the ACC because they're going to be chasing Miami throughout. I think they're going to win. They're at four. Number three, they're tough to figure out, but the momentum is pretty good at this point. They were left for dead 2 weeks ago after getting blown out on the road by Washington State, but at 3-1, Texas Tech, they might be ready for a run. There's something about this. They had a really good game this past week, and they beat a good Arizona State team in Lubbock. They should get a win over Cincinnati. Their coach, Joey McGuire, is taking heat, but there's talent here. And they just might. They might get on a little bit of a streak. And number two is Texas A&M. They beat Bowling Green by six. And if you listen to their head coach, Mike Elko, you would thought they lost by two touchdowns. He went after his team, went after his offense. It was interesting. They're playing with a backup quarterback, but this is a really, really good defense. And there's a lot to like here if they can get it figured out and get healthy at quarterback and get more consistent on offense. A&M is at number two, a solid number two. And number one is Texas. They're the number one team in the country. Even though, think about this, even though their schedule is, it's turning out to be ridiculously easy and it sets up perfectly, here's one thing that is that makes you think more of Texas, okay? And that is their win over Michigan now looks a lot better because Michigan just beat a really good USC team at home this past weekend. So Texas might be as good as we think. They just really haven't been tested. They get a terrible Mississippi State team in Austin this weekend. And the only drama, because Texas is playing with house money at this point, the only drama is whether Steve Sarkisian wants to keep Quinn Ewers on the shelf. That's his starter. Everyone gets that. Maybe not everyone with a microphone in front of their face around the country, but you need to know that's their starter. The question is, would he want to give Quinn Ewers another week of rest and let Arch Manning get the start, get the valuable playing time, get all the cuts, get all the clips, all the highlights that follows a Manning name, and let Quinn Ewers rest because after Mississippi State, Texas gets an off week before they play Oklahoma and Dallas. I think common sense is going to say they rest Ewers another week. But Here's a guy that was chasing the Heisman Trophy just a couple of weeks ago. He might be pressing to play. So that's an interesting dynamic. You know, how much emphasis does the player have in saying, hey, I'm ready to go. Let me get some reps. Now, remember, Texas has that off week before they're in Dallas against Oklahoma. And I think you now start scoreboard watching for Texas fans, because they're going to be cheering. I think they're going to be cheering on Georgia against Alabama this weekend. And the reason is it would make a Texas win over Georgia in Austin in a few weeks look that much better. Plus, it sets up for the best drama that would likely, if Georgia beats Alabama this coming weekend, it looks like, if Texas takes care of business, it looks like you're going to get a Texas-Georgia 1-2 in Austin. Steve Sarkisian, you know, it's interesting to follow him in news conferences, you know, to see how much credit or how much he acknowledges being number one in the country. And I think the answer is he clearly embraces it. In fact, some people might say borderline cocky at this point. He talked about his team's mentality at number one.
I think our guys kind of believe in our formula for success. I think they believe in preparation. This group, most importantly, the preparation, the practice that creates the confidence to just go play. You know, I don't think that we've played to what we, the thought was supposed to be, meaning this is a big game, we need to be up for this one, or maybe this is a lesser opponent, and we come down and we don't have the mental intensity. I think they're so focused on what we need to do that we stay really consistent in our approach throughout the week, and we stay really consistent in pregame warmups. We stay really consistent when we come out of the locker room. Now, this group's confident, and their confidence comes from the belief of the preparation that they put into it. And so I love that our personality is coming out of this team. I think we've got a pretty cool swagger about us right now, but that swagger has been earned because of the work that they put in and day out.
That's Steve Sarkisian, head coach at Texas. I told you, he feels pretty good about where he is, maybe for good reason. Now, pay attention. This is a weird transition, but this is something that has quietly happened. I mean, both of these stories are fairly quiet, but if you follow college football, I think they're the start of things to come. I think this might be the future of the sport, which is not great news for the ticket-buying public. Here you go. The weird term is talent fee. It was just introduced about 10 days ago. A talent fee was mentioned by Tennessee. What Tennessee turned around and told their ticket-buying public is they're now going to have, in essence, a surcharge on their tickets, but they're calling it a talent fee. You know what the talent fee is for? Well, the talent. They're telling people, we need to charge you 10% more for the tickets so we can give that money to the players. It's weird because college football is in the process of settling at least one lawsuit, a $2 billion lawsuit. And that is former players have sued the NCAA, which is the NCAA is basically like your neighborhood association, right? You pay to be a member, then they turn around and tell you to clip your hedges or whatever. So that's what the NCAA is. So these member schools, so they sort of put out the rules and the member schools just sort of sign off of it and that's it. Well, these former players dating back to 2016 have sued, and a settlement has been reached of more than $2 billion of these former players saying, you know, I should have been paid when I was playing like these guys. It's over a $2 billion settlement. It cost each program, the estimate is, more than $20 million. That's a brutal bottom line hit to most programs not named A&M or Texas. And the thing is, there are more of these lawsuits that are coming. So either getting in front of it in a weird way or getting in front of it in a practical way, Tennessee decided to do this by passing the costs to the taxpayer, not the taxpayers, the ticket buying public. So here's how it's described. In what is believed, this is ESPN, what is believed to be the first arrangement of its kind, Tennessee fans will be charged a 10% talent fee on tickets to help pay athletes as part of a new revenue sharing plan set to begin in 2025. So this is the way they're going to tackle that $20 million hit for the lawsuits. Now, you can think this is innovative or you think this is ridiculous. There is sort of an fundamental economic problem here that you're probably going to figure out before long. The 10% increase on all tickets also adds an average increase of 4.5% on football tickets. I think that means they may be jacking up the price on football tickets by 15%. They're not telling you it's a surcharge. They're telling you it's a talent fee to make you feel better about, hey, look, I'm just going to be handing my money over to another good player. It's all cool. By the way, the Tennessee football program had a $75 million profit in 2023. They did $135 million in revenues. So, you know, how does this play out? The problem is there are more lawsuits coming. If you settle one with former players, I don't know how you can win the argument not to settle with others. So these have already started, and nobody knows exactly how it's going to end, except that the settlement is going to end up being a lot more than $2 billion. So don't be shocked to see more crazy or innovative ideas like this to find a way to generate revenue, to pass those revenues on to the players who are demanding more. And to put that in perspective, just so you know where the sport is going, and UNLV just this past week, their starting quarterback, three games in, said, they're not paying me enough, I'm leaving. They're undefeated, and he's leaving. So watch it. You know, I think some people are going to say Tennessee's ticket talent fee is way ahead of the curve, or some are going to say it's really risky. And as you know, the risk is this. At some point, you're buying tickets at, I think the estimate is $400 for a ticket to a Tennessee game. There's a point where people get priced out. The markets might eventually say, I can't do it. I can't do it. I mean, that's the thing you have to think about for other programs. They may be able to pull it off at Tennessee for a while, but could you turn around to a program like SMU or UTSA and say, hey, you know what? We got to find a way to pay the players. We've got to add 10, 15, 20, 25% to ticket prices. At what point does it work? And at what point does it drive you away? It's going to be the issue of the day going forward. This is the first of many of these deals, many of these ideas that are going to be kicked around. And theirs starts in 2025. And because the lawsuits kick in next year, programs are going to have to start doing this pretty quickly. Does it work? Would it work elsewhere? I mean, how tolerant would you, the ticket buying public, be if somebody said, oh, I see, we're not going to call it a surcharge. We're going to say it's a talent fee so I can give my money to a player. All right. I think the public might say, as long as we win, I'm cool with that. If we don't win, then it's been a waste of money. I'm Jeff Ward. This is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. You're listening to Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats, breaking down Texas college football right here on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
It's Game Day, and I'm Jeff Ward. Texas A&M and Arkansas play in Jerry World, that's AT&T Stadium, this weekend, and Andrew Monaco is the longtime voice of the Aggies.
Now, so they say, powered by the Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
All right, Andrew, it is the $1 million or maybe half a billion dollar question going forward. What's up at quarterback for the Aggies?
Mike Elko has said game time decision every Saturday. And that will become even more important, Jeff, once Connor Wigman's shoulder heals. It's still bothered from the tackle against Notre Dame. Was good against McNeese. Was not good. He had trouble. So there's a little bit of pain. Once that pain goes away, then you're going to see. So for the time being, it's Marcel Reed, the quarterback for Texas A&M. But Mike Elko has said it will be a game-time decision going forward.
I don't know that I've heard him say this publicly, but, you know, the standard rule is, you know, if you have two, you have none. Surely they want someone to take this job and run with it.
And that's what Connor did in the camp. That's what I think people have to understand. It's nothing against, it's not like Marcel Reed nor Jalen Henderson lost the job. Jeff, you know how position battles work. So someone has to be the starter, right? You've got to put all 11. It's funny. I asked Mike on his coach's show about it. I said, we love to focus on the quarterback. I said, but you have enough talent, the competition for every position. You know what I mean when I say game time decision. Noah Thomas, Jabri Barber, Jahdae Walker. They could be your first three starters on this weekend. Well, Jabri came back from an injury, so people didn't notice that change at wide receiver. It could be Moose Muhammad because it's a better matchup against a team. Or it could be Cyrus Allen, things like that. Again, because of the notoriety that quarterbacks get. He's got a number one. It was Connor Wigman coming out of camp. Marcel is number two. What happens when one gets hurt? Two becomes the number one. I think the problem becomes when you can't settle on your number one quarterback. I think that becomes a little bit of a problem. And you're still trying to find out who the number one is. But you know what? Competition is not a bad thing. I remember when Haynes King, a couple of years ago, won the battle with Zach Calzada, and he said, being a coach's son, John King, the great high school coach in Tyler, Haynes echoed him. He said, all I did was win the job for week one, and I think that's how it goes moving forward.
Well, yeah, and it's a good enough defensive team that they'll be in every game, right?
Yes, yes. And what you see from Marcel Reed, and look, this is interesting, and I will ask Mike this week. He's got established quarterbacks. They still need experience, all of them. I'm talking about all of them. Like, I know Connor's been here for some years, but he's been injured. Marcel Reed, the first start was Florida. His second start is Bowling Green. Arkansas will likely be just his third. He's got game time. And you can't just snap your fingers and get experience. Even Jalen Henderson, who was at Fresno State, didn't start a lot of games. That's what you like, though, that balance. Like, you're not asking a young quarterback to go out and win your game. Can he? Does he have the talent? Yeah. But you're right about that defense. They held Bowling Green to just 3 points. Bowling Green had the lead at the half in Penn State the 2 weeks prior. They held Notre Dame defensively. The problem becomes consistency, Jeff. You've got to do it consistently for 60 minutes. But, yeah, and I think that helps a quarterback who's still learning to gain experience where he doesn't feel like, now I have to go do this when we're on the field because our defense isn't stopping the opponent. Now you can play your game, be within yourself, all those cliches. You don't have to be the hero. I think you can trust all those people around you.
Talking to Andrew Monaco, the voice of the Aggies, A&M, and Arkansas play at AT&T Stadium this weekend. I found it interesting in Mike Elko's news conference, and that was, I'm not going to say he ripped his team, but he down, I mean, it's a 6-point win over Bowling Green, and by 45 seconds into it, Andrew, you thought they would have lost by 16. I mean, it was, yeah. I assume that was a message sent to his football team.
Never discount a win, right? Because winning is hard.
Yeah.
I don't think he liked the way they won. I don't think he thought that was the standard that was established the week before. And not just that it was a win against Florida. He was happy with the improvement against McNeese, understanding it was McNeese, and that's no shot at them. Understanding what you do from week one to week two, from Notre Dame to McNeese, McNeese to Florida, then Florida Bowling Green. Which week did you improve most? I can't say that the week from Florida to Bowling Green is where they improved the most. So, yes, you did enough to win. There were the positives, but here's a positive. You didn't have as many penalties, so you worked on that. But you shouldn't have as many penalties being home as you should on the road. He didn't like giving up the explosive plays. It's a game that they could have had a chance to put away early. Didn't do that. Giving up those plays on defense. On a play that you had seen in the first half, and there was not that kind of communication. A block punt is a mistake. They were momentum-type plays. So you get the win. Jeff, you know this also. You can coach a little harder after a win. Players are a little more receptive after a win. So was he happy with the victory? Yes, because you never give those back. With the way they did it? No, you could see some frustration and knows that this is a team that can still get better but has to play to that standard every single week. You can talk faceless opponent you want. It was almost as if they believed, well, we're only playing a MAC opponent, and it almost came back to bite them in the butt.
Yeah, but it's back to their defense. They've been good enough. No, better than good enough. They've been really good and really consistent. I guess some level of anticipation that if we just get better on offense, if we just get more consistent on offense, that there's something here and or frustration. I'm trying to figure out which one of those do you hear in his voice, because they're not far away.
No, they're not. And that's the thing. Look, they've scored on every opening drive this season. That's big for the offense, right? They had it at Florida. 92 and a 99-yard drive. Outstanding. Problem is, a three and out. They had 2 3 and outs that helped turn that game against Bowling Green. But then again, to the defense, right, you want this consistency on offense. I'm not saying you're going to score every drive. But, you know, coaches get frustrated. We want drives to end in touchdowns, not field goals. But at least it's field goals and not a punt or a turnover. On the defensive side, they gave up those explosive plays, right? First of all, kick out of bounds doesn't help to start a second half. And then a 65-yard play. You answer that score, great. Then you give up the reverse for 40 yards. But isn't it interesting, after the block punt, they stop. That's where I thought the defense was really good. They get the ball basically inside the 10. They don't even gain yardage on that, and the field goal is missed. Like, he was real proud of that defense. That's why I think it comes to the consistency overall. And I'm with you. Once this team plays more for this week, Marcel Reed, you get more familiar with him. They're running the ball well. That's been a great sign. Right now, Mike's a big third down guy. Can you stay on the field on third down? Can you get off the field on third down? You look at their third down defense, it's really, really good. Can it get better on offense? Yeah. Jeff, I know what you're saying. You can improve in all these aspects. But what are you going to do, like, when that week where the defense isn't there? Can the offense then take over for them? That's the team part. You never have both sides playing off against each other. Well, we're doing our job, you know what I mean? But I know what you're saying. When it gets consistency and you see that improvement, that makes the team a lot tougher.
So I've heard coaches now in a 12-team tournament world, I've heard coaches admit early in the year, hey, you bet we're planning for a 12-team tournament. And I've heard others just dismiss it entirely. I think it looks like it's going to be six SEC teams get in. Does Mike Elko or anybody around there, do they talk about being in the tournament? Do they talk about preparing for the tournament? They talk about depth for the tournament? Or is he one of these people that just leaves it to the side and said, I'll deal with it if it happens?
When it comes to the coaching part, Jeff, I think it's very much he's focused on the day-to-day, the week-to-week. But knowing anytime a coach says, we have everything ahead of us, especially SEC coaches, right? Because LSU loses to USC in Las Vegas. Arkansas with the loss to Oklahoma State. I'm just going to name those two schools. You still have the conference and still gives you that opportunity. Jeff, you know, in the past, sometimes those early season matchups take you out of being in the Final Four.
Right.
That gets held against you. That's where I think coaches say, hey, when we have everything in front of us, that's if we can take care of business in the conference, you know, that's easier said than done.
Yeah.
that's the challenge of going through the conference. So, yes, is it a goal? Absolutely. You want to be a part of that. But that can't be accomplished in September. But the foundation to get it accomplished can be done in September. Like, you can't keep taking steps backwards and finding a way to win every week, because that's going to come back and bite you. So if you can see that improvement, just the way every coach says, win your space on every snap, the scoreboard will say what it says at the end. You improve week to week, that 12-team field, if you're fortunate, will have your name in that field at the end. I think he's got his mind on it. It's not the be-all, end-all. You still want to see the improvement each practice and each Saturday. But I think it's in his mind knowing. Now, there's more room for margin, if that makes sense, where before a loss could be absolutely costly to you. You can absorb some of that a little bit now in this field of 12.
But for us in the media space, it's, I think in particular with Big 12 teams already starting to knock each other off, I'm not sure the Big 12 gets more than the champion in, and that means that's a benefit, I think, to the SEC, who can make a really, really good case, even in September, that they can go six deep in that tournament.
Yeah, yeah, and don't you think strength of schedule helps with that?
Yeah.
And that's where the SEC and the Big Ten, I think, definitely. Look, Jeff, I'm saying that not just in football.
Right.
I will say that for a lot of sports in the SEC. I'm thinking baseball. You get 10 three-game series in the SEC, your RPI is going to be pretty good, win or loss. You know what I mean? Like, there's that. But, yeah, I can see that where other conferences will cannibalize themselves. I'm not sure. I'm with you. No, I am with you with what you say. I'm not sure that they cannibalize themselves in the SEC. I think they get that same way with the Big Ten. I think they get that benefit of the doubt that Georgia's win at Kentucky for another conference, a one-point win wouldn't look that impressive. And I don't think Kentucky gets hurt that much because of a loss like that. So they're still alive, so to speak.
Yeah, no, that's well put. You're spot on that. All right, Andrew, as always, thanks for doing this. Have a great game this weekend.
Pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, let's talk about another quarterback issue. You know, the biggest name in the sport now. Last name happens to be Manning, happens to be from football royalty. I'm Jeff Ward. This is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Game Day with Jeff Ward, where Texas college football goes under the lights. On News Radio 1080 KRLD.
Longtime columnist at the Austin American Statesman, now at the Houston Chronicle. He's, I'll just say it, he's the only guy that's been around here longer than me. One of maybe two or three, I guess. His name is Kirk Bowles. Kirk, how are you, man?
Can we tell people I covered you and wrote about you?
Well, I mean, I guess now that you had to say that, I guess you probably could. You could lie, though, after that and say it was all great things.
All of it was great.
All right, let's do this. Steve Sarkisian, who trots out under center against a terrible Mississippi State team for Texas?
Whose choice is it?
Ooh.
You know Quinn itching to get back out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that train of thought. Let me ask you, whose choice should it be?
It's got to be the coach. You got to take it out of his hands because, you know, the player always wants to play.
Yeah.
And you got to make decisions, you know, sometimes, well, hopefully all the time, for the betterment of the team. And the only thing it really accomplishes is that he kind of puts Quinn Ewers at risk, maybe prematurely. And does it show you're trying to chase numbers to help him win the Heisman? And neither of those are for the betterment of the team, I don't think.
You don't think there's any argument? I think I just saw it splash up on a screen that Texas is a 39-point favorite, which probably fits since Toledo beat Mississippi State by 30. Is there any deference that should be shown to Quinn Ewers saying, listen, you can go put up some crazy numbers. I know you want to chase the Heisman Trophy. That's good for all of us. So, yeah, you feel like going, let's go.
No, I just think for the good of the team, you don't. Because if by the end of the year, if Quinn has regained his job and he's putting up big numbers, and even if he's only putting up good numbers but they're winning, all that will take care of itself, and nobody's going to remember who played the Mississippi State game. So that's why I think it's just a safer choice, you know, to go with Arch. And Arch needs more reps, no matter who it's against.
Yeah. Does that come with any risk? If so, what?
Risk of...
I don't know. Noise level. I mean, it's just popularity. I mean, all that stuff. Any downside to playing Arch Manning more?
Yeah, there is the slight and more public opinion, probably first and foremost, because, you know, if Arch went out and threw 10 touchdown passes and ran for 120 yards, then, it all heats up again. And I don't think Sark wants anything to do with that. Of course, if he was en route to a 10-touchdown game, he'd be pulling him early and putting Trey Owens, the freshman, back there.
So the Manning mania, none of which is his fault. He has, those guys have handled it masterfully. I can't find a circumstance, particularly in social media era, when three people, Ewers, Manning, and Sarkisian, have done such a phenomenal job of just staying in their lanes and laying low.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a blueprint for everybody, for every parent. You know, let the coach decide, make your decision, stick with your decision, you know, everybody's had arts transferring to Ole Miss, LSU, or someplace, and they've resisted all that temptation. He's not all over the place with NIL. I mean, I asked him Saturday, I said, what kind of grade would you give yourself? And Art said, probably a C+. You know, that's not a guy who's full of himself.
Do you think that it's gotten so much publicity, and it is talked about a lot, that he is, you know, he's an outlier because he didn't leave. I mean, most guys, as you know, leave. They find out they're not going to start. They're gone in 3 days.
They're out the door.
Does it, you think it sends a message to other quarterbacks around the country, or are they just going to do what they're going to do?
I think it should, but it won't.
Yeah.
You know, human nature is being what it is. If you're not playing that first year, you know, you probably are looking for greener pastures. And that brings up a good point, Jeff, because Sark has also been a master at playing these freshmen early. You know, they played 54 guys in the first half, and granted, it's against Louisiana Monroe. But, you know, he's got Ryan Wingo out there. He's got Ryan Niblett, the four-spring running back, carried for a touchdown. Colin Page. Yeah, they're all out there. And so he's going to play. If you got talent, he's going to play you, even if you're a freshman, and that's a good thing in this world.
You know, they're going to – you think Texas will be a double-digit favorite over Oklahoma?
As of today, I do.
Yeah, I do too.
And maybe not even small double digits, because Oklahoma doesn't have a real identity yet and sure doesn't seem like it has an offense. And it's the polar opposite of Texas right now, as you know. When they bench their five-star quarterback and put in a freshman, you know, just 4 weeks into the season. So it seemed like they got all kind of problems. I mean, if you're barely getting by Houston, you're getting blistered by Tennessee at your place, you struggle with Tulane. I mean, they've got some real issues. And it's so weird because for a team that dominated the Big 12 with 14 titles, and Texas had, what, four, including the first and the last one? You know, Oklahoma has regressed probably as fast as anybody this side of Nebraska.
And their schedule, I mean, forget the game with Texas. Their schedule is brutal. That I can't see how that's not a six-loss team.
No, right now, I'm right there with you. I mean, you look at their road trips. You know, they're at Auburn. Auburn's desperate.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not so sure – you know, who's going to win that game? But, you know, they got to play Texas. They got to go to Ole Miss. They go to LSU. You know, they've got Alabama coming in, Norman. I mean, they got to be worried about bowl eligibility right now.
Yeah, I think it's realistic, which begs to ask the other question. And Oklahoma's not the only one that does it. Texas has done it countless times. Everybody does. But I just don't understand. You're coming off a good year. You beat Texas. Brent Venables is in his second year as a head coach. You turn around and do the standard thing. You know, you think everybody would learn from the A&M debacle with Jimbo Fisher. They turn around and give the guy another long-term agreement, and now we're talking about a program that's, you know, a quarterback at least is a mess and staring at six losses. What's the point of throwing a long-term contract at a coach? Where are these guys even going to go nowadays?
There is no point. You know, you just pat yourself on the back when you do that. There's no reason to extend Brent Venables because who's trying to hire him away?
Right.
And then and they botched the quarterback situation so badly because you can make the argument the last 20 years, Oklahoma's been quarterback you. I mean, they have Heisman winners just transferring, walking onto their campus like Baker Mayfield. And then they somehow botched the whole Dylan Gabriel thing and let him leave for Oregon thinking, oh, we're good. We're good. You go ahead and, you know, here's your boarding pass and we'll be just fine with Jackson Arnold. Well, it's not that easy. Oklahoma's found, somebody like Florida State is found, and look at Michigan. Michigan threw 34 yards of passes last week. Had to have a 290-yard rushing to beat Southern Cal. So you're not guaranteed anything, and that's why you got to give Sark tremendous credit for having two quarterbacks.
But I don't understand that these executives – and I haven't understood it for years. What does somebody tell you? I mean, you've been around and covered enough of them. When you ask point blank to an AD or president, why did you feel the need to give that guy a long-term deal? What is the answer back?
Oh, I think the real answer is ego, but they'll never say that. But a lot of things they fall back on, Jeff, is that, well, we need to show recruits we believe in Brent. You know, he hadn't been off to a blazing start, and we're hearing whispers recruiting trail that one more bad year, we're going to give Josh Heupel $20 million a year to come home.
Yeah. All right, Kirk, good talking to you, man. Great stuff.
You too, buddy. Have a good one.
Up next, let's make some picks against the point spread and talk about those under the most pressure to deliver on Saturday. It's game day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
It's Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward, so let's talk about pressure.
Now, Under Pressure, powered by Sampac 5-Star Ford, North Richland Hills.
These are the coaches, the players, or teams under the most pressure to deliver this weekend. There's a lot to spread around. Okay, the under pressure list. First up, Texas Tech coach Joey McGuire again. It seems like he makes this list almost every week, but there's good news for Texas Tech. Tech can get on a roll after two straight wins and a really, really good home win against Arizona State. They're favored over a mediocre Cincinnati team, and with another win, Joey McGuire, at least for a week or two, can get us off his back for a few weeks. Under pressure, SMU. They're tough to figure out. Fresh off scoring 66 points and a win over TCU, SMU hosts Florida State, a team the entire country has been talking about for a few weeks for all the wrong reasons. It has been a dumpster fire for Florida State. They come to Dallas at 1-3. SMU has one loss, and the one loss every week that goes by looks a little better, a little more tolerable, and that was a loss against a very good BYU team at home. So they have a chance now in the ACC to continue to chase Miami. They have got to get a win at home here. They'll either get, nobody knows what to expect from Florida State, but they're either going to get a Florida State team that is desperate and dangerous, or they're going to get a Florida State team that's mailed it in. SMU is favored, and for pretty good reason. Under pressure, Marcel Reed or Connor Wiegman. And then I would add to that the entire A&M offense. In fact, just whoever plays quarterback and the A&M offense is really, really under pressure right now. We don't know which quarterback starts for A&M. They had a 6-point win over Bowling Green, and Mike Elko wasn't happy at all. In fact, he took a pretty long news conference to rip his entire team for good reason. They scored only 26 points against Bowling Green. So no matter who plays quarterback, A&M has got to find some offensive consistency. They play a decent Arkansas team, a really good offensive team for Arkansas that's putting up a lot of points. The game is in Dallas and AT&T Stadium. A&M's problem is no secret, and that is their offense is 10th now in the SEC in total offense. They are 11th in the SEC in scoring offense. Their defense, truth is, they're good enough to keep them in every single game. But their defense needs some help. You almost feel like they're on borrowed time if they can't get their offense over the hump, because that defense is just hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. The A&M offense has to step up here. Whoever plays quarterback and that offense has to step up at some point. This is a big game for them. Under pressure, TCU and their head coach Spike Dykes. Not only did they give up 66 points at home, losing against SMU and that thing, the Skillet Bowl or whatever the heck they call that thing. He made news. Spike Dykes made news by getting kicked out of the game. It was a bad look. It was strange, too, because Spike Dykes is one of the most likable guys in the college game. But you could tell The fact that he got tossed from the game, you could tell the beatdown they were taking by SMU really frustrated him, to say the least. His TCU team has got to bounce back here. The problem is they play a good Kansas team. TCU may not be desperate at this point, but they're close. You feel like TCU is at a tipping point to go one way or another. All right, next up, let's do this. We'll pick a few games.
Now, by the numbers, powered by Classic Chevrolet.
Some good games in here. We're starting to get that point of the season where these are must-have wins. The point spreads are interesting. So let's pick a few games. Yep, we pick against the point spreads. I usually qualify by saying you're only supposed to wager among family members. Here we go. I think I was 3-1 last week, or maybe I'm making that up. All right, Texas Tech. They're a two-point favorite at home against Cincinnati. You know what? You feel like it's turning a little bit for them. It had to turn sooner or later. There's too much talent there. I like them at home here. I like them to cover the points and another win. This would be three wins in a row, and everybody's off Joey McGuire's back for at least a couple of weeks. I like them to cover that spread. Texas State. Man, that loss against Arizona State weeks ago is going to haunt them. It really is, because they'd be chasing an undefeated season. So Texas State is favored by 8 over Sam Houston State. They're terrible. I'll take Texas State in a big way in Huntsville. Texas State is, you know, really every single week we're going to say this now, every week that they win, they're a 3-minute meltdown against Arizona State from being undefeated. All right, how about this? SMU is favored by 6.5 over Florida State in Dallas. Now, if we just stop there, if you went back to August before the season started, could you imagine telling someone that Florida State would be a touchdown underdog to SMU? They are, and it's real, because Florida State's a mess. And I'll actually take SMU. This is a talented SMU team. I'm not sure, you know, what happens to them every now and then, but I'll take them to cover here at home. These are two teams that are tough to figure out, but SMU has life in the ACC. Florida State at 1-3 is cooked. They're finished. The Aggies. Okay. Yeah, this one feels a little dangerous for them. They're in Dallas at AT&T Stadium. A&M is favored by 4 over Arkansas, and that has nothing to do with their defense. That line is all about their offense. Only favored by 4 against Arkansas. I don't trust the A&M offense yet. There's no reason to trust the A&M offense yet until they show it, and they haven't shown it yet. So they can be pretty good on defense. They can be really good on defense. But they would be incredibly dangerous if they could get something going on offense. I don't know who gets the start at quarterback for A&M. I think A&M wins this game. There's too much talent. In a lot of ways, it'll be a home field feel for this game at AT&T Stadium. But I think Arkansas can hang around long enough to keep it close. A&M probably wins, but I take Arkansas to cover the 4 points. TCU is on the road at Kansas. They're getting 2 points. Has to be a bounce-back game for TCU. I don't know how you can trust their defense at all. I don't know how the coach can trust their defense at all. They gave up 66 points last week. I think Kansas wins, and Kansas covers the 2 points. And that's a bad look for TCU. It's a bad look if you're trying to carry the flag of the Texas teams. You need TCU to win this game at Kansas. I don't think it happens. And then we get to Texas. My gosh, what a schedule. Like, I'm waiting for people to start accusing Texas of setting this up, buying their way into the SEC and getting a favorable schedule, because this thing is easy for weeks. Texas plays in its first SEC game, and, oh, it's a joke. Yeah. Mississippi State is absolutely awful. Mississippi State, I think it was 2 weeks ago, lost to Toledo by 30 points at home. Texas has started the year. They're averaging 47.5 points per game, and that's including a road game in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's 47.5 points per game. The quarterback storyline is the storyline. You know, it's all about YouTube clips at this point for the two quarterbacks. It may either be Quinn Ewers. He might get the start. He's listed as questionable, which is now, interestingly enough, is now a rule in the SEC that coaches have to produce an injury list each week. He is listed as questionable.
Smart move would be not to play him. There's no need to play him unless he really feels like he needs the reps, that they're worried that he gets rusty. So, I mean, that could be a thing. But either way, it doesn't matter. Many of you could start a quarterback for Texas, and you beat Mississippi State by 47.5. Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning with the start. Either way, this is not close. The spread, oh gosh, it's an embarrassing 38 points. A game in the SEC, and the point spread is 38 points. You want to know what's even more embarrassing? They'll cover it easily. They might cover that by the half. That's how good Texas is, and that's how bad Mississippi State is. Yeah, I think Texas covers that number. They might score 50 or more again. They may end up, think about this, Texas may end up playing Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl in a couple of weeks, and they will go into that game averaging more than 50 points a game. And that'll probably be a double-digit spread in that game. That's how hot they've been to start the season. There you go. There are the picks. Remember, told you, don't bet unless it's among family members. That's it for Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward. We'll do it again next week.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.